It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What is going on, everyone? Welcome back after a brief hiatus. Adam and I are back. Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I'm your host, Ebro, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. We're back, baby! It's playoff time! Let's go! DFS time. Adam and I are going to break down these six games for this weekend's wild card slate. Adam, what's going on, man? I know you've been rocking the NBA podcast. How does it feel to get back into the NFL confines, my friend?
Yeah, it feels good, dude. I'm currently sitting in my office chair with my Buffalo. I got this hoodie for Christmas, right? It's a hoodie and it's a picture of Trey White because duh. And then he's like, it's like he's in like the picture of is him like in coverage, and then he's covering the planet, right? And the shirt in the hoodie says, "Water covers 2/3 of the world. Tre'Davious White covers the rest." So I'm obviously fired up for this Bills game this weekend, but there's also a lot of other really interesting games, right? Like Baltimore-Tennessee, we saw that matchup last year where Tennessee really, you know, exploited Baltimore. We'll see how that shapes out. Cleveland-Pittsburgh with everything going on in that game. So this is going to be really interesting. I love this slate where you can play the all days or the full weekend slate. So you have six games. You've been doing a lot of the content as well. We've had a ton of playoff content and stuff and DFS content for this slate. And then of course we got to pair it with the podcast. So yeah, I'm feeling good. I'm a little nervous, obviously, but we'll see how Saturday shapes out. It should be fun,
dude. It's gonna be a fun game slate. Yeah. So if you're heading over to DK and stuff, you can either play the six-gamer and cover both Saturday and Sunday, or they have the two- to three-game slates. We're going to be pumping out content all weekend long. I still have articles left to drop. I'm writing up every single game from a showdown perspective. We have Kevin Adams. His game-by-game is going to be live. Elliot's doing all of his picks as far as his cash core and his under-owned plays. We're going to have streams live on FTN Daily both Saturday and Sunday, so tune into that. If you have not gotten signed up for FTNDaily.com yet, this is a fantastic opportunity. Because look, fantasy season might be over, but DFS is still rolling, baby. Like, we have still got tons of action all the way through the Super Bowl. You can save 10%, get signed up with the promo code FTC today, and start crushing content, man. Like, just start reading through all of these articles, the streams we have live, daily, man. So let's kick this off, Adam. Indy is heading to play your Bills. The over-under is set at 51.5. The Bills are favored by 6.5 in this game. Dude, what do you think?
I'm trying to separate fandom and anxiety and separate it from analysis. But in all honesty, I think for the Bills offense, I honestly think Cole Beasley's status is really important. He practiced limited basis to end the week. He's questionable. Stephon Diggs is questionable. He's going to play. I don't think anybody in the Bills organization or media or anything thinks he's not going to play. Beasley's the one that's actually questionable, and he's obviously had a career year. He's been huge for this offense, and with the Colts, they play so much zone defense. They're going to need Cole Beasley to get in the middle of that zone defense and have, you know, John Brown and Stephon Diggs and Gabriel Davis take the top off and have Cole Beasley work underneath. So I think that's going to be really important for Josh Allen, who, look, obviously, you look at the quarterbacks on the slate, you have Lamar, Josh Allen, Brady, Russell Wilson. Like, you have a lot of dudes. Josh Allen, I think, has the highest ceiling on a given week, just given how he's played this year. But the Colts are defense that, you know, their run defense is better than their pass, but they're also a team that doesn't allow a ton of big passing plays. So I'm really interested to see how they defend Josh Allen with their zone defense, especially if Cole Beasley doesn't play. At this point, though, it's hard to just kind of say the way he and Stephon Diggs are playing that they just can't get theirs against anybody right now. So, yeah, I think Beasley's a huge part of this game right now. What do you think of Cole Beasley in the passing game? Because I don't think either of us are interested in the running game against this Colts run defense.
Oh, hell
this
no.
Seems I'm like not- a game. Remember the game against Seattle where the Bills just threw the ball like 25 straight times or something? And then after the game, Pete Carroll's like, yeah, I didn't think they'd keep throwing it. It's like, well, you guys are good against the run. We can't run the football. So, why? Like, I've said this on the podcast probably 512 times. So, I'll add a 513th. Brian Daboll does not care about having a balanced offense. He doesn't care if they run it 15 times and throw it 17 times. If they can't run the ball and they're throwing the ball with success, they'll throw the ball every down. We've seen that countless times this year. I think that's probably going to be what their offensive game plan is in this game.
That's exactly what they're going to do, Adam. Like, why in the absolute hell are you going to run against a Colts defense that, since week 9, is allowing the 12th lowest explosive run rate? They're freaking top 6 in adjusted line yards and open field yards. Like, there's no way that Buffalo is going to be able to run on them, and they shouldn't even try.
Buffalo's like, smart, man. It's like a waste of down. Like, okay, you're going to run it on 1st and 10 and set up 2nd and 8. Like, whatever. Like, why not just, like, your passing game has literally destroyed pretty much everybody you faced. Like, why not just, we're in the playoffs now. You lose, you're done. Just, I don't think Brian Daboll is going to mess with the running game very much in this game, unless they get up, you know, 20 points or something like that, which they could, but I don't know if they will.
I still don't even know if they're going to even mess with it then. I mean, right. Outside of designed runs from Josh Allen, I just don't see it happening, man. And there's no reason to. I mean, the way that you can attack the Colts is attack their secondary. We've talked about these corners on and off all season. And the way that the Bills' passing weapons are composed, they can get after these Colts corners, man. Rockison's already been ruled out with a concussion. Yep. Jake Harry is not any good. Stephon Diggs is going to roll around the entire formation, probably about 30% at every single spot in the formation. I love John Brown in this game. Rhodes has problems with two things. It's shifty receivers and speed, and John Brown has both for freaking days. He's going to run 50% of his routes against Rhodes, who since week 9 has been beatable, man. Like 22 receptions, 38 targets, 93 passer rating in his coverage. So I love Brown, probably as my favorite guy on the Bills side. Now, if Beasley misses, I do have some interest in Beasley if he plays.
Same.
If he misses, I want all the freaking Gabriel Davis I could get my damn hands on, because there are two distinct things about Gabriel Davis. He has been a Swiss Army knife for Buffalo all season. So if Brown has been out, he's played Brown's role. If Beasley's been out, he's played the slot. So if he's going to roll in the slot versus Kenny Moore, I love the matchup. Kenny Moore's allowed a 79% catch rate, 95 passer rating since week 9. And Gabriel Davis, not only would he play the slot, he owns the deep role for Buffalo. He actually leads this team in deep targets. And the Colts, they are really good at defending short area passes. And that's because a lot of their corners are bigger, they're more physical, but they're also slower. So the way you beat them is you attack them deep, which Josh Allen, we know, can do. Like, they're 6th in DVOA versus short passing, but 22nd versus deep passing. So if Gabriel Davis, you're telling me that he plays the slot, he owns the deep role, I love him in this game. I still think that he's worth considering for your lineups, especially if you play, if you're stacking up Josh Allen, and we got to talk about this, Adam. If you're stacking up and you're playing the three-gamer, and you're looking at, okay, everybody and their mama is going to play Josh Allen, then how in the hell do I make my lineup different than every other Joe Schmoe out there? Well, you go full game stack, or you play for Josh Allen going damn nuclear, and you play him with John Brown. You play him with Stephon Diggs. And if Beasley plays, you put him in there. So instead of stacking him up with two pass game options, get three in there. We've seen Josh Allen go nuclear, go 300 or 350 and 4 touchdowns. He does that. It ain't just Diggs that's coming along for the ride, baby. He can bring three dudes with him. So I love those receivers in this game. I like Beasley. If he plays, I think that you got to consider him a full go. They're not going to run him out there, especially with Davis in their back pocket. And they've seen what this dude could do. If Beasley plays, I think that he's a full go. Do you think that's wrong, or do you think that he could be limited if he suits up?
I mean, I think there's a chance he goes from like an 80% snap share to like 70, if that counts as limited. But yeah, I agree for the most part. I think he'd be pretty much full go. And the other thing with Buffalo is, even if Beasley plays, when Buffalo's had their four receivers all healthy, and there's been a lot of weeks where they haven't because John Brown's missed so much time, they've gone four wide receiver and empty so often. They love going empty. So that means all these guys are on the field, which means even, you know, would Gabriel Davis be the most, you know, the safest play if Beasley's active? Absolutely not, but he'd still be on the field. And he gets so many wide open touchdowns playing this. He leads the team in touchdown. Well, actually, Diggs probably does now after the season finale in week 16, I guess, would be, because he sat most of week 17. But Yeah, I think Buffalo, if they're at full strength on offense, it's just going to help Josh Allen that much more, and they will go a lot of empty, which will only make them, you know, make guys like Singletary and Zach Moss less appealing than they already are.
Yeah, I'm not going to play, like, I'm fading the whole backfield. I'm not playing Moss. I'm not playing Singletary. We haven't seen a floor, much less a freaking ceiling, from either one of those dudes. So I don't want any part of it, man. The Colts, the way you attack them is not via the run. So give me Allen. Give me these pass catchers. We haven't talked about Dawson Knox. I want to know your thoughts on him because he's been running more routes. His route per drop pack percentage has gone up. His snaps are gone up. His target percentage is going up. Now, the Colts are a tough matchup for tight ends. They're fourth in DVOA. Do you think Knox is viable before we get to the Colts, or is it just like, we're probably getting too cute there?
I mean, if you told me he's going to catch the ball, I'd think he's viable, but he doesn't catch the ball very often. When he does, he gets a lot of yards. I don't know. If Beasley's out, maybe he gets a little bit more slot role as kind of just a large slot receiver at tight end. But if Beasley plays, I probably won't even consider Dawson Knox. I'm going to say this, though. Mm-hmm. I'm calling my shot right now. Brian Daboll is going to call up another trick play, and somebody's catching a pass off some sort of trick play, whether it's Singletary to John Brown or Josh Allen from John Brown. Yes, I'm calling it right now. Brian Daboll will call at least one trick play in this game, and the Buffalo Bills will connect on it. That's my call.
That's McKenzie time then, dude.
Happy for him last week, by the way. I love Isaiah McKenzie. If you're a Bills fan, you love Isaiah McKenzie.
I wasn't on him as far as, like, if everybody goes back and read my game by game for week 17, I was firmly on Gabriel Davis. I should have been on McKenzie. That was an oversight by me. But, dude, it went out and had himself a game, man. The thing about McKenzie is all of his work, like, most of his touches throughout the season, his limited work has all come in the red zone. So rushing attempts, targets. If that dude's getting a target, it's probably inside the 20. So you can never count him out for scoring a touchdown. But moving over to the Colts side, Adam, tell me why we shouldn't love Zach Pascal as the favorite pass catcher for Indianapolis, because I freaking love him in this game. Like, I don't want to attack Levi Wallace. I don't want any part of Tre'Davious White, so I'm fading Pittman. I'm fading Hilton. I don't even know if I'm going to play them this week. I love Pascal, as well as other parts of that offense. But tell me, am I wrong, or are you willing to sit here and go the T.Y. Hilton route? I'm not.
No, like, Trey White's not going to shadow T.Y., but he's going to be on him for a decent part of this game. And while T.Y.'s looked a lot better down the stretch of the season, but it was also against, you know, Houston twice, Jacksonville, you know, Vegas. Like, Buffalo's defense is playing at a top, you know, 7 or 8 level over the last month or so. I mean, we've targeted slot receivers against Buffalo for a lot of the season, and while Taron Johnson's definitely been better lately, like, that's still the avenue you'd want to attack the Bills if you're throwing the football. And look, we know the Colts are going to try to get Jonathan Taylor going and keep Josh Allen off the field and win the game that way, but if they fall behind and they are underdogs here, they're going to have to throw, and I think Rivers and maybe the tight ends, or Pascal and then maybe the tight ends, get the work here. The problem is, like, the tight ends, there's 3 of them, obviously, but the Bills are allowing, you know, a lot of production of slot receivers. Pascal's a really, really sneaky, just kind of good player. Gets a decent amount of red zone work. And what is he, 3,700? Like, yeah, I think
he opens up the entire board for you.
And he's not like a guy where it's like, oh, okay, he, you know, hopefully he gets on the field. Like, he's like a 90% snap guy regardless. So he's always on the field. So, yeah, I like the Zach Pascal call. But obviously, like, this game is going to be, you know, Jonathan Taylor centric with how he's played over the final 5 or 6 weeks of the season. Buffalo knows that Jonathan Taylor is going to be the game plan in this game. You know, the Colts offensive line is still just, you know, mashing up front. Now, Anthony Costanzo not being there definitely doesn't help, but he's more of a guy in pass protection. It'll be interesting to see how Buffalo defends the Colts. But I mean, Jonathan Taylor, you got to think right now with Jordan Wilkins not even playing snaps anymore. Naeem Hines is literally gone back to what we thought his role would be, which is like 3 carries, 4 carries, and, you know, 4 or 5 catches. I mean, Jonathan Taylor on the slate, you have Henry, looks like Kamara's going to play And that's probably Jonathan Taylor, who you feel best about at running back. I mean, there's no reason for you not to. I know you talked about your love for Jonathan Taylor this week. And as a Bills fan, like, that's the main worry I have about this game going, you know, south for Buffalo. Is Jonathan Taylor just, is he going to do what he did last week? Most likely not. But if he can kind of just continue to rip off 6-7 yard runs, get first downs, the only way the Colts win this game, in my opinion, is if they don't fall behind early. If they fall behind early, like 17-3 or something, they're probably in trouble. But that's where Jonathan Taylor comes in, so we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I love Jonathan Taylor. I think that he's going to be one of the highest, if not the highest, owned guy on the slate, and for damn good reason. I mean, he deserves it. Like, he has been running out of his mind, dude, since his breakout. So since week 11, third in rushing attempts, third in avoided tackles while running the ball. I mean, the dude's been doing some Derrick Henry-esque kind of shit. Like, it's insane, dude. And the way you attack, you and I have talked about this, and you've even admitted it. Like, the Bills, their Achilles has been their run defense. I mean, like, since week 9, 28th in explosive run rate, they're 32nd in second field level yards. Like, Jonathan Taylor can have himself a freaking day. And if the Colts... I don't want to put this bad juju on you, okay? But if the Colts were to win this game, it would have to be on the back of Jonathan Taylor.
I agree.
Like, he's going to have to go nuclear to keep the Bills' offense off the field. And if he can break multiple big runs in this game. Like, that can happen. If that's the case, like, the Colts do have an actual shot to win this game. It's as insane as that sounds, but I like Taylor. I want to bring up Nyheim Hines here for a second, because as popular as Taylor is going to be, Nyheim Hines is one of the best leverage plays of the entire freaking slate, because Taylor is going to be uber chalk, like I said, for good reason. But if the Colts get down, I mean, look, I've seen and we've talked about Taylor's taken over this backfield, red zone work, rushing work, his involvement in the pass game. We cannot, like, if the Bills do what we think they could do here, and they jump out to a massive lead, like, say they get up 14, 17 points in the first quarter, all of a sudden just bam, 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 and score on every possession. Nyheim Hines could get some work here, man. So I want exposure to him at GPPs. I think that he's a fantastic leverage play, as well as Pascal. I like both of them in this game. And I haven't even mentioned, dude, I'm not willing to play Phillip Rivers, and I know that, like, there's merit to playing him, especially, like, if they're in catch-up mode. I don't think that he has the ceiling. He's not priced low enough for me to consider him, but I do want to bring up Jack Doyle here. Yes, the Colts have for most of the season, have split their tight end usage in three different ways. In the last 2 to 3 weeks, that's kind of gone down to Burton and Doyle. Doyle's the only one getting the red zone work. Burton is still garnering routes and targets, but not nearly to the clip that Jack Doyle has. Now, we know Buffalo, even since Milano has come back, they've still been susceptible to being beat by tight ends. They're up near the top in receiving yards and touchdowns allowed to the tight end position. I think that if you're going, and this is only as a full game stack, because I'm not playing Jack Doyle as a freaking one-off, but in a game stack, to get some other dudes in around a game that could possibly freaking shoot out, that has on the Saturday slate easily the highest over-under out of all three of these games, it makes a ton of sense just to game stack the hell out of this thing. So if you were to tell me you wanted to go Josh Allen pass game weapons and run Pascal Doyle as leverage off of Taylor or even Nyheim Hines, I think it's a fantastic way to start your builds.
Yeah, I think Doyle will have to score like a red zone touchdown, because with the way Milano's playing and Tremaine Edmonds has been much better in pass coverage last month, and the fact that Jack Doyle is not running past players, and the Bills have, in my opinion, the best safety duo in the NFL. Jordan Poyer didn't make the Pro Bowl. I had to. I don't think he's going to rip off, you know, because I think a lot of Buffalo's numbers against tight ends is a little bit skewed with that huge Mike Gesicki game where they didn't have Tremaine Edmonds or Milano. But at the same time, like, there has to be an avenue to attack this team, and you're not throwing 10 passes at T.Y. Hilton and Trey White's coverage, and you're not – I don't think Michael Pittman or Pascal are garnering, like, 8 or 9 targets each. So, yeah, and Doyle did run as the tight end one last week. He played 55% of the snaps. Trey Burton was under 50%. So, yeah, and especially on the Saturday slate, like, you look at the options at tight end on the Saturday slate, they're not good. I mean, the best guy is probably what?
If you look at the whole entire six-gamer –
right, you have Mark Andrews
getting you maybe 20, which looks like that's his ceiling for the season. If Doyle, like, goes, say, 4 for 40 and he catches a tutty, okay, he gets you 12 to 14 points. and he's only 2,900. How much more does that unlock versus if you're paying $2,000 to $3,000 more to play some of these tight ends?
And you get like 17 from Andrews or something.
Yeah, I mean, and they easily, Doyle could easily get within 3 points or equal them. At that point, you're differing yourself on a 3-game or a 6-game slate for the rest of the field, and you're opening up more salary to get in different players, and automatically your build is going to be different than a lot of other people out there.
Yeah, I think the tight ends and Jonathan Taylor are going to be a huge part of you know how much success the Colts have on offense in this game.
Agreed. I absolutely agree, man. All right, moving on to Los Angeles has taken on Seattle. The over-under is set at a 42. Seattle is favored by 3. This game is disgusting, Adam. Now, we're getting the news. I think Jared Goff is going to suit up and play. He's gotten in limited practices. All of the news is trending to that. Even with Senior Goff under center, Dude, this game is nasty. Tell me what you like out of this game. I think there's a mini correlation that I'm interested in, but the rest of the game as a whole, it's tough.
Yeah, I mean, if Goff plays, you could talk me into Robert Woods, 6,200. The floor should be there. He's going to get 7 to 10 targets and a carry or two, and at that price, I think he's perfectly fine. Cooper Kupp, his snaps have kind of been all over the place at times because when they go, you know, two tight ends, he's off the field. And when they go run heavy, he's off the field. And at 6K, like, Woods seems to be the safer option. And for a lot of the year, he's had a higher ceiling, too. So I would just play Robert Woods for $200 more. Then you have the mess at tight end between Higby and Gerald Everett. Higby's been running more routes over the last couple weeks. But, again, like, I don't feel great about it. And then you have the backfield where Daryl Henderson's on IR, which is great. Cam Akers came back last game and had 21 carries, did absolutely nothing with him. But that wasn't the greatest of matchups. This one isn't either, though. Like, I don't want to play Goff. And then Seattle's offense has been legitimately bad the last month or so. Like, they're not putting up points. And the Rams' defense has been one of the best units in the league. It's probably why they're in the playoffs. You know, their offense has had some games, but there's been way more inconsistencies on offense for them. So their defense has been out of this world. So I don't really know if I want to play anybody from Seattle. We know what DK Metcalf has struggled to do against Jalen Ramsey, and you know Jalen Ramsey is going to cover him in this game and get up for this game. Ramsey, in my opinion, has been the best corner in football this year. Yes, over Trey White. Yes, over Xavier Howard. Like, Ramsey is the best corner in the league. And the reason he's so effective against Metcalf is because every corner that faces DK Metcalf, they either have one or the other, right? They have the size or the speed, but they don't have both. Jalen Ramsey has both, which is what you need to cover DK Metcalf. So that scares me. Lockett's priced up to 6,900 after his really nice game against Arizona or against San Francisco last week. And we know he's been up and down. He's had, what, one game over 70 yards in his last, like, 9 games? Like, this game is gross, man. And there's also still the outside shot that Jared Goff doesn't play, and it makes it even more gross. So I don't know. If I had to play one player from this game right now, it'd probably be Robert Woods. But then you have the Seattle backfield where Carson only had 11 carries last game. He was on the sideline, like, his ear was bleeding or something, so he missed a handful of snaps. But Rashad Penny's active. Like, I don't know, man. If there was one game I'm least excited to watch for this weekend, it would be this one. Like, I'd rather watch Washington-Tampa Bay over this game, to be honest, because I would rather watch the Bucs offense then I'd rather watch either of these two offenses right now. Like, people aren't talking about it, and maybe it's because more attention is being drawn to the guys that are in the MVP race than the fact that Russell Wilson isn't anymore. But this Seattle offense has not been good lately.
They've not been good. Their neutral pass script rates have fallen off the table. This whole game, I know that there's merit, or at least there's ideas of merit, to play Russell Wilson in this spot. I'm not on that, man, because we haven't seen a ceiling out of him in quite some time. I mean, the dude's only crested DK 20 DK points twice in the last few weeks. One of those weeks, he got into one of his 2 rushing touchdowns for the entire freaking season. So, you know, he luck boxed getting into 19 in that game. My whole thing with this game is that the sneaky correlation that I would like to take away from this game and build around other stacks is Cam Akers and Tyler Lockett. Because just for the reasons you're talking about not playing Metcalf, I think that there's more merit to playing Lockett. Now, I do wonder how popular he's going to be. Now, out of the corners that you can attack for the Rams, they're all ridiculously damn good. Do not get me wrong. I'm not going to mince words in telling you that any of these guys are just a turnstile and you need to attack them. But if Seattle is going to have to move the ball, they're going to have to do it some way. On the ground game is not going to happen because the Rams have been quietly, a top 3 to 5 run defense this year. They're top 2 in second level yards and open field yards allowed. Now, I know their adjusted line yards are sit at 15th, but that's more of a volume metric and not necessarily indicative of how freaking good their run defense has been. But if you're going to be Seattle and you're going to try to attack this defense in some way, shape, form, or fashion, because you got to try to move the damn ball, I think it's Tyler Lockett in the slot versus Troy Hill. And the reason I say that I'm not going with Wilson, it's not just his ceiling, but we've seen it time and time and time for the entire season, Adam, that usually if Russell Wilson gets there, he only brings one dude with him, and usually then he spreads it around to everybody else. So if Russell Wilson even were to have a fantastic game, you're really talking to yourself and saying, okay, am I playing DK or am I playing Lockett probably as a one-off? And then, you know, mixing that around my other stack. So I like Lockett in this game, and I want to correlate him with Cam Akers. And yes, Seattle is fantastic at defending the run. The thing about Cam Akers that I think is really sneaky here is that he came back last week and didn't look limited at all. Like, dude got 25 touches, saw a season high in targets. Yes, I know John Wolfer was there. Yes, I understand that he did not do anything with his 21 carries. But really, what was stopping the Cardinals from stacking the box and saying, okay, yeah, Mr. Johnny Wolford, beat us. Please try. Try to beat us without Cooper Kupp. And you're starting Josh Reynolds and Van Jefferson opposite Robert Woods. So try to beat us. Ah, you can't. So I'm not worried about what Cam Akers did previously. We have seen teams that have committed to the run still be able to run on the Seattle run defense. It has happened in some weeks. Like Dalvin Cook had a good game versus them, as well as Madison. Like, we have seen that happen. Andrew Whitworth is probably going to be back for this game. Even a 60 to 70% Andrew Whitworth is still better than half of the damn league. Okay, so that's a huge boost to this run blocking offensive line. And the thing that I want to get out here about Cam Akers is that Seattle has been quietly bad versus pass catching running backs. And if I think that Akers is going to be the guy running routes, now he split routes and ran a little bit lower clip at 40% compared to what he had been doing in previous weeks, but Seattle is 29th in DVOA versus pass-catching running backs. They're tied for the 5th most receptions allowed to the position, 10th most yards, and they're tied for the 3rd most receiving touchdowns to running backs. If we're talking about Seattle pressuring Goff or Woodford, like, if that's the case, then we're talking about short area passes. We're talking about dump downs to Akers. And if Akers is a full go, we've seen breakaway potential, explosive potential. And for a guy that, Adam, he's going to see 20 to 25 freaking touches. Like, that's what's going to happen. They're going to feed him. Like, if Sean McVay is smart, which I still think that he is, a 5,100 Cam Akers is mispriced for a 25-touch possible workload in this game. So I'm going to have exposure to Akers and Tyler Lockett. Akers, I think, is more viable as a one-off or putting him in other lineups. As far as a correlation, I want Lockett and I want Akers.
I mean, how many running backs on the main slate or on the 6-game slate or the Saturday slate do you project to have more touches than Cam Akers? Henry, maybe Kamara, but Kamara could top out at 18. We know that. Jonathan Taylor, maybe Montgomery. Like, I don't think Nick Chubb hasn't been getting, like, 25 touches or carries, you know? Like, and to add to your point about what the Cardinals defense did last week, Cam Akers saw 8 defenders or more in the box on 57% of his runs. That was the highest rate among any running back in Week 17. And for the season, the highest rate in the league is 42.5% for Peyton Barber. So that was, you know, 15 percentage points higher than the league average or the league leader for the season. So they just completely said, you know what? No Cooper Kupp. You got John Wolford at quarterback. Good. We'll let you try to beat us. We're just going to let you know, we're just gonna stack the box. And if Goff's back and Woods or and Kupp will be back, like I don't see them going that same route. So yeah, 5,100 is really cheap for a guy that should get, unless they fall drastically behind and it's all Malcolm Brown, which I don't think happens. It's too cheap for Cam Akers.
I still think that then that we're still talking about pass game usage for Akers. I still think it's there. And the other thing I want to bring up with his pricing, like, can we say that how different or how much leverage do you think that Cam Akers is playing him, who has a lower, like, he has a higher touch floor and ceiling than J.D. McKissic, who's priced right next to him, and I think that he's going to carry lower ownership. Am I really wrong? You think so?
You think McKissic's going to be more popular than Cam Akers?
I do. I think that people want to play McKissic because they're like, okay, well, he's going to get dumped down.
All right, let's go to that game then. Good segue.
All right, man. Well, Tampa Bay is heading to Washington. Tampa is favored by 8. The over-under is set at 44.5. Tell me, why do you think McKissic won't be popular, considering that Alex Smith or Heinicke, whoever the hell is under center, is going to be doing checkdowns? I've heard all through the week about how Tampa's allowed the most receptions to running backs, although that's kind of a wonky stat because if you go look at game logs, there's not any receiving backs that have just exploded versus them. It's been dink, dunk, like a few receptions here and there that's culminated into this ranking where they've allowed that much. But it doesn't mean that they've like just been exploded or just beaten up on by receiving running backs. So do you think that McKissic's going to be less popular than Akers? Because I don't think it's going to happen, man.
I think Akers should be more popular because at the end of the day, I just like for a $200 difference, like, yeah, McKissic should get seven or eight targets in this game. But like Akers has a chance to get 25 touches. So like, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't. This is another game as a whole where it's like Gibson's banged up with the toe. He's probably going to play, but it's a terrible matchup. McLaurin's banged up with the high ankle sprain. He's still going to play, but they have not been creative at all with the way they've used him. They're not using him in the screen game. They're giving him a couple targets here and there, but like you said, it's all been dink and dunk with J.D. McKissic and Logan Thomas, and then they're running the ball. And then on the other side, you have Mike Evans is questionable. That'll obviously open some things up, but I don't think this is a particularly great spot for Tom Brady, who's been really bad under pressure this year. He's 29th in pressured completion rate this year, and we know that Chase Young and company can get after the quarterback. Chase Young is fired up for this game. He literally called Tom Brady out essentially after they won in Week 17. But like, yeah, this is a team that can get after the quarterback. You know, they're currently 25.5% pressure rate, top 7 in the league. We know their D-line is probably the deepest unit in football. Like, I don't think this is particularly a great spot for Tom Brady. Ronald Jones is probably going to be, you know, in that 15 to 18 touch range, but we know he's got, you know, a low floor with how quickly they would pull him from a game, especially in the playoffs if he makes a mistake. As a whole in this game, like, who's your favorite play? I guess it depends maybe if Mike Evans gets ruled out. He got in some work at practice, but This is a weird game, too, I feel like.
It's a weird game. I mean, for me, I think if you're playing the three-gamer for Saturday, then you got to have Brady probably in your three max builds because you're not just going to play all Josh Allen teams. Like, that's just not going to happen. So I think that Brady is viable. The pressure is definitely a massive concern because Brady's splits with pressure and no pressure have just been insane mm-hmm. this year. I mean, like, in a clean pocket, the dude has the 9th best passer rating. Under pressure, it falls to 30th. And like you're talking about, Chase Young, they can get after him, man. The thing about Brady is that if Evans plays and stuff, I still do think that there's a possible ceiling here because I think that the Washington secondary is not nearly as freaking good as people give them credit for. And Brady,
they're masked by the pass rush. That's what it is. Like Darby has like a high PFF rating and stuff. Kendall Fuller's been good in the first half, but like, if you watch Kendall Fuller this year, I think he has like 4 or 5 interceptions. Like 3 or 4 of them came off absolutely terrible passes where it looked like he was a wide receiver. Like Kendall Fuller is a good corner, but yeah, it's totally because of this pass rush. And that's why I've always had some interest in receivers because their numbers look bad, opposing receivers against Washington, but like individual matchup one-on-ones, like Antonio Brown, Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, they will win against these guys. Like,
That's my whole thing, man. And the other thing about it is the Tampa line has kept Brady clean for most of the year, like the 8th lowest pressure rate allowed. And Outside of the two games in New Orleans, like, Brady's had five games total. So two of those are versus the Saints, where he's faced top 10 pressure rate teams. Now, the Saints just eviscerated him. He got sacked three times in each one of those games, had a two passing touchdowns to five interceptions, and didn't eclipse 240 passing yards in either one of those games. But the three other games versus Denver, the Giants, and Kansas City, I mean, he averaged 307, had eight passing touchdowns and two interceptions. So I think Mike Evans plays into this a good bit, whether he plays or not. And I still do see there is a possibility for a ceiling outcome here for Brady. Now, if Evans plays, I love him. I love him in this game because nobody wants to play him if he's banged up. Depending on what practice report you've been reading, there's stuff out there saying that he might not go. They might not want to push him. There's also stuff out there saying that the swelling was very minimal on the knee. And if you look at practice game videos, he's out there jogging, doing stuff. Like, I mean, I think that if he plays, we have to consider him a full go here. I don't think they're going to trot him out in this spot as anything less than that or a decoy or whatever the hell.
Especially because, like, if you wanted to play Evans and, like, if he wasn't full go, I'm sure the Bucs would be like, okay, well, we have Antonio Brown and Chris Godwin. Like, we'll still be okay if Mike Evans isn't 100% if we want to play him 20% of the snaps. Like if they're going to play him, I don't see why they wouldn't just full play him, like you said, especially in a playoff game. If they thought he couldn't play, you know, I think they would be smart enough to say, okay, we'll sit him and we'll rely on our other two really good receivers.
Well, and I think Evans has been the clear alpha since Antonio Brown has been there. Like, he's the only guy with above 20% target share. He is crushed in the red zone. He leads them since week 9 with 12 red zone targets. And he's going to see Kendall Fuller, who has been terrible since week 9. Like, dude is allowed, he's tied for the most receiving touchdowns allowed in the NFL. He's allowed a 113 passer rating since week 9. I think Darby is grossly overrated. If I'm going to go double stacking Brady, I think it's Evans. And then if you want to go Antonio Brown or actually Gronk, I'm on those options over Godwin. And it's not that Godwin's bad. It's just that Jimmy Moreland in the slot has actually been really good. And if you look at since Antonio's been there, he actually has a higher target share than Chris Godwin and more red zone targets. And they've been getting him involved more and more every single week. So if Evans doesn't play, I think that still playing Brady is viable. I'm more likely to go the Antonio Brown and Gronk route because Gronk, I think Gronk could have a 2-touchdown game here, dude. Like, Washington is 17th in DVOA versus tight ends. Gronk is second behind Mike Evans over that span since they've had Antonio Brown in red zone targets with 8.
By the way, can I take the L real quick? Because I'm sure I'm not the only one, but when Gronk came out of retirement and joined Tampa Bay, I was like, yeah, he's not going to be a top 10 tight end. Like save this. You know, if he does, I'll own it. I'm an idiot. I was like, yeah, he's washed. He's got nothing left. But it's not only just been the fact that the tight end position's bad, which has helped, but Gronk's looked pretty good this year. So I'm taking the L on that. Gronk, well done, sir.
Hey, I'm with you, man. I don't disagree at all, man. Gronk has played really, really damn well, and I think that this is exactly, if they've limited him at all throughout the entire season, because he has been seeing some of his routes cut because of Brate as well being there. This could be just a fantastic, like, Gronk smash, 2-touchdown game, especially if Evans is out. So if he's out, I love AB. I love Gronk as a double stack with Brady. If you want to bring it back, I don't think you have to bring it back with somebody on the Washington side. Like, regardless of whoever plays quarterback, I'm not playing that quarterback. I think you have massive questions on the viability of really any of the guys there. Like, McLaurin, yes. Can McLaurin beat Carlton Davis and Jamel Dean on the outside? Yes. Is Alex Smith even going to look at him when he does? That's the biggest question. And I can't tell you that he does. And for McLaurin's price, I don't see the ceiling to justify playing him, even if he does play. I'm not playing freaking Cam Sims. That's not going to happen. Logan Thomas is going to be immensely popular on every slate that you were to possibly play. So I think there's merit to fading him. Now, can Tampa be beat by the tight ends? Yes. But you have a Washington offensive line that has allowed Alex Smith to be the second most pressure quarterback in the NFL. What stops that from happening versus a Tampa defense that's now gotten healthier? Devin White's still going to be out for this game, but they're probably getting Shaq Barrett back. They get Carlton Davis back. They're going to be able to sit here and pressure Alex Smith or whoever's going to be back there. If it's not him, it's Heinicke. Like, I think that there's merit to stacking the Buccaneers side and not playing anybody from Washington, and we're talking about ways to have your builds be different. I think that's a way to go, man. And, like, I get the McKissick love. But the other side of it is, McKissick could get freaking like 10 targets, catch 6 balls, and get 40 yards and get 10 points. And at the end of the week, you're like, why in the hell did I play J.D. McKissick in this spot? Even if he could get targets here. But am I wrong?
No, and I agree. Like, I love Terry McLaurin. I just don't want to play him right now with... Like I said, they're not using him in creative ways. They can't use him down the field because they don't have time, and Alex Smith can't... You know, he can't extend plays. Yeah, I mean, like 25% of Alex Smith pass attempts behind line of scrimmage. It's a massive rate. It's not surprising. I just can't use Terry McLaurin. There's not a ceiling right now. Like, he scored last week, but after that first drive, like, it was the same Washington offense where it was under pressure a lot, running up the middle, and then getting, you know, Logan Thomas catches off. Like, they're using Logan Thomas more creatively than Terry McLaurin, who's their best player. It's pretty frustrating.
It's immensely frustrating, dude, and I went into, like, want to toss my TV remote mode ever since they were playing against the Steelers, and he's going against, like, backup cornerbacks, and Alex Smith's like, nah, why am I going to throw the ball to you when I can just check it down to Logan Thomas and J.D. McKissick, like, 50 times a game? I mean, nah, I'm good, buddy. I'm good. You just keep running wind sprints, baby. You got that. You got that. Like, nah, I just can't, dude. I can't in the spot. I'm not going to go that direction. All right, moving on. So, getting to one of the most fantastic games the entire freaking weekend. Baltimore is heading to Tennessee. The over-under is set at 54.5. The Ravens are favored by 3. Adam, this game is going to be fireworks galore. Like, I love all different ways and parts and pieces of this game. Kick us off here. What do you like?
Yes, yeah, so Tennessee's defense is really, really bad. Just on every single level. So, like, the question, what are we doing with Hollywood Brown, who's been really good to close out the season? He scored, what, five? He scored 6 touchdowns over his last 6 games. He's still only 5,400. He's not that expensive. Like, Adoree Jackson's back, which I guess helps, but and he has the speed for, against Hollywood, but, like, this defense as a whole has just been terrible. And then you have J.K. Dobbins, who's, all he's doing is scoring touchdowns. He scored in 6 straight games. He is still getting, like, 13 to 15 carries a game, not, like, the 18 to 20 we might want. There's a chance that Mark Ingram's active for this game, but I don't think it, if he's active, like, I think he's, like, a 2 carry, maybe plays on in pass protection or stuff like that, or, like, 4th and 1s, like, I don't know how you get away from J.K. Dobbins. So, like, the Baltimore side is definitely more appealing just given how bad Tennessee's defense has been. Not even just, like, lately, but the entire season. I mean, this has been the reason why they have been in games like last week where they should have put it away, and yet they almost lost and almost lost the division. But you look at Tennessee's defense this season, like, they give it up in, you know, the passing game. They give it up in the running game. They give it up in the red zone. Like, 69.2% of the red zone possessions against him end up in a touchdown, 3rd highest rate in the NFL. They're allowing the 5th most points per drive in the NFL, 2.6. They are allowing teams to score on 45% of their drives. That's the 7th highest rate. Like, they are legitimately terrible. So, Lamar Jackson, if there's anybody on the slate that might be able to rival Josh Allen's ceiling, especially with how better he's been lately, it's probably Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, I like that call. Lamar Jackson could just break the slate this week, dude. It could definitely happen.
And you know he's pissed about last year.
Oh, dude, he's got to be, man. And here's – it's a perfect, perfect spot. It, with Tennessee being able to push him on the other side for us to get just a ridiculous nuclear game from Lamar Jackson. We all know the rushing equity. Like, I don't have to sit here and tell anybody, yes, Lamar Jackson runs. And he's really damn good at doing it. But looking at how they can attack passing-wise, Tennessee, even with Adoree Jackson back, has not been good. Now, we need to sit here and monitor what Adoree looks like for this week because he started off the week with a limited practice. Thursday, he went to DNP with the knee issue. Now, we need to see what his status is going to be walking into the weekend. I mean, we just don't know at this early juncture. He might be out again. We've only seen limited action. He hasn't looked good when he's actually even been on the field. Like, he's been burnt to a crisp over the last two games and he's been active. And you look at Tennessee overall, man, since week 9, 25th in explosive pass rate allowed. They're bottom barrel against tight ends. That, like, Malcolm Butler on the outside and Adoree have struggled with speed even since he's been back. Malcolm Butler's struggled with speed his entire
career. Brandon
Cooks
absolutely destroyed Malcolm Butler last week.
And Marquise could do the same damn thing, dude. Like, I think that we could have a ceiling week. I think that it's coming, man. Like, I'm all in on Lamar Jackson. I think Hollywood could, and I'm going to call him Hollywood.
Is he back to being Hollywood?
Look, I think we could see it this week, dude. I think we could see multiple long touchdowns because Malcolm Butler sucks versus speed. He's terrible on go routes. Marquise runs a ton of both, and he's super fast.
Yeah,
I think we're going to see a ceiling week for multiple players in this offense. And I think that there are really interesting leverage spots in this game, as well as talk about from GPPs, because as popular as Lamar is going to be, as well as Andrews and these other players, or J.K. Dobbins, which I'm not that interested in J.K. Dobbins, man. I'll be honest. Like, basically, I've been telling everybody, talking about it in our Discord, that I think J.K. Dobbins, for the production, not the player, for the production you get out of him, because it's zero pass game. He's basically, he falls in between, like, not as sexy Nick Chubb or really, really sexy version of Damian Harris. Like, you're literally hoping that he runs for 150 and 2 or gives, like, has a long gain like last week. Because past that, he's probably going to get you 13 or 14 points, maybe 15. And he's not going to get you there. So I'm not that interested in J.K. Dobbins. I think he's going to be popular coming off the big game. And I think that there are leverage spots. Like, if you look over the last few weeks, like, Gus Edwards has had a very prominent red zone role in this offense. I think Gus Edwards is firmly in play out of this game. One, he is uber ridiculous cheap. He has two touchdown upside. We have seen that. He has a 100-yard rushing upside. We've seen that as well. So out of all the popular pieces out of this game, Gus Edwards, especially in large fields or just GPPs, I think that he has to be in your player pool. I'm willing to play him. Like, if I'm playing five teams, I want to get Gus on one of them because I think he's a fantastic leverage spot. Because if Lamar gets there in the passing game, that means J.K. doesn't happen. If Gus Edwards scores twice, that means other chalk players are probably going to fail out of this offense. So I think it's a really good pivot point as far as getting leverage on the field in GPPs. But what are your thoughts on Gus Edwards, or am I just crazy?
What is he, 4,400? Like, he's still going to get, at worst, 10 carries. And he's still been – Dobbins has been eating into his goal line work a little bit more lately. But, I think – maybe not on DraftKings, but like Gus Edwards and J.D. McKissic, like, they're both probably gonna get the same amount of touches. Maybe Edwards gets a little bit more overall because he's gonna carry the ball 10 times and could catch like two passes. But yeah, I don't think it's the worst call. It's a little bit scary if Ingram does actually step on the field, which I don't know if they will. Their running game has clearly been more explosive with Dobbins and Edwards, so we'll see. How popular is Mark Andrews gonna be given just how bad tight end is on this slate? I mean, Andrews is the clear top guy.
I think he's going to be incredibly popular.
Especially because he's too cheap.
Yeah, I think that, and plus, we were all on him. Like, if you go back and listen to the Game by Games, when they played Tennessee last time, I was telling y'all, I was all in on all of the Mark Andrews, wanted him everywhere. I played him a ton. I was massively overweight in GPPs that week. He had 20 points. I'm not saying he's a bad play, but on a 3-game slate, 6-game slate, you got to be different. And I think Mark Andrews, considering the other tight ends on this slate, is a great way to do it. And if you're looking at ownership percentages, which if you don't know where to find this stuff, head over to FTNDaily.com. Kyle Murray has the best in the freaking business. They are fantastic. Dude is on point every single week. Get signed up with FTC, the promo code, save 10%. Go check them out. I'm going to be really, really interested where Marquise Hollywood Brown comes at this week versus Mark Andrews, because I think Andrews is going to be more popular. I think that he's going to be chalkier. And I think that if Marquise gets there, it's leverage again off of chalkier plays in this slate. But where do you stand? Do you think that Andrews is going to garner a higher roster percentage
than Hollywood?
Yep.
Yeah, I do. Just because of the position.
Yep.
It really comes down to that.
Like, I understand that the tight end is gross, but there are guys on this slate that can get close enough to where it makes a lot of sense of not playing him. And Mark Andrews, as great as he is, he still doesn't have the ceiling, the 2%, 1% outcome ceiling. We have not seen it this year. It does not mean that it cannot happen. And especially in playoff games, island games, things of that nature, you see a lot of crazy stuff happen. Like last year, everybody was talking about, oh, the Ravens are going to win. Oh, the Ravens are going to win. And Derrick Henry went in there and just truck-sticked their entire damn team. Nobody sitting here and thought, like, oh, that's definitely going to happen. Tennessee's just going to roll them. So for Marquise to sit here and get free and go for multiple long touchdowns, dude, I think it can happen here, man, and I want exposure to it.
He's been getting some quiet red zone work lately, too, which helps. Tennessee, I mean, do we have to say anything about Derrick Henry? Like, play him if you want. He's going to get 30 carries. Like, the matchup's not incredible. It's not, like, it doesn't really matter with Derrick Henry. I don't really know if we need to say anything.
If you want, I think I can make you conversations for both sides of it. I'm not going to spend 30 minutes talking about the weekly, do we play Derrick Henry? Do we not play Derrick Henry? I do want exposure. I'm probably not full fading him. But the thing about it is, Adam, if Derrick Henry gets you 25 and other running backs on this slate can equal that or surpass it, there's merit to not playing Derrick Henry. That's my entire Derrick Henry spiel.
I kind of like Corey Davis here. He is way too cheap at 4,800. I know he had the goose egg against Green Bay. That was, you know, the terrible snow game where Tennessee just got routed. And then, you know, was underwhelming last game. But he had 11 targets. He is way too cheap at 4,800. I know he's going to see Marcus Peters, who, like, if I'm choosing between the corners, I'd rather face Peters than Marlon Humphrey. So, and, like, Corey Davis has literally been a top 20 receiver this year in fantasy. He is going to be on the field a ton. They use him a lot in those little drag routes that are really tough to cover, especially against man coverage. Those are definitely like man coverage beaters. I just think he's like, you know, $1,200 too cheap. I know he was underwhelming the last two games, but I think this is a really nice price tag for Corey Davis.
Yeah, I don't disagree, man. DraftKings has not wanted to price up Corey Davis the entire freaking year, and
like
it doesn't
matter. Like true or false, he should not be, what is he, like over $2,000 less than A.J. Brown.
Yep. He should be in the mid-5Ks.
I agree. Like, he should be where Hollywood is, at least.
Yep, he should be, if not closer to like 6K, I think. Because if you look at all of his metrics, and you stack up target share, you stack up air yards, all these different things, for him and A.J. Brown, they're really, really damn comparable.
Super
and the price is
close.
Not even the same.
Like, super
it's,
close.
It's crazy. I feel like looking at, like, when we had Marvin Jones a few weeks ago, and I know Marvin Jones failed, this is exactly how I feel about Corey Davis. I feel like DK got drunk. I feel like they priced him, and it's either you play a crap ton of Corey Davis or you don't. I think that he's going to be popular, but I think it's for really good reason, Adam.
And
do you think he's popular here?
He could, just because I think he's really underpriced. And he has a serious ceiling, obviously. Like, he's 8th in yards per target at 10.7, 4th in yards per route run. He's averaging 7.5 air yards per target. Like, he's got a huge ceiling, even in this matchup. And we know Marcus Peters is good, but we know he's really aggressive, and he can get beat. So I just think, regardless of matchup, like, if I don't care who he's facing, this clearly isn't the greatest of matchups, but like you said, his production on a per game, per target basis, stuff like that, alongside AJ Brown, has been super close to the point where it shouldn't be this much of a price discrepancy.
No, it really, really shouldn't. I love Corey Davis for all the reasons you stated. I mean, Peters is, we've talked about the reasons that how Jamel Dean gets beat. I think it's a very comparable conversation with Marcus Peters.
Yeah, Peters is much better, but I agree. It's the same kind of play style.
Yeah, he jump routes, but that also means that he can get his ass beat deep, considering on a double move or something in that nature. So that's one of Peters' big downfalls in his game, and why he has these outlier weeks of just like he gets smoked in some weeks, because that happens. Jonnu Smith, any love there? Because I don't have any.
His routes were up, but like, they have another team that it's not only Anthony Firkser, but it's Jeff Swaim and it's Mike Culper. They use four tight ends. So unless Jonnu, who he will get a carry or two, inside the five and gets goal line work, but like his targets and snaps and yards all went down with Jeff Swaim back last week. That's not a good sign if Jeff Swaim coming or Jeff Swaim didn't come back last week, but Ferks are still there.
I'll play Jack Doyle over Jonnu.
Yeah, it's like the same situation almost. Like Smith has a better chance of scoring, I think, but like targets, they're all going to be like similar between the two.
Here's a really interesting one considering price point here. Would you play Dawson Knox over Jonnu if you were in that price range for your last spot?
If Beasley sits, I'll play Knox. If Beasley's in, I'll play Jonnu.
Yeah, I like that call. All right, man, moving on to the Chicago Bears are heading to the Big Easy to take on the Saints. The over-under is set at 47.5. The Saints are favored by 10. Dude, I love Drew Brees. I love the passing options for this game. Drew Brees has been stacking 20-point games. If you look at reports out on Twitter, he's healthier than he's been in most of probably various points of the season, much less like any time recently. I think that this could be the Michael Thomas explosion game.
Is he going to play?
The last report said that he's trending to playing. Okay. So I'm looking at him at playing. Now, again, we don't know recording this on a Friday, so we have to monitor this throughout the weekend. If he plays, dear God in heaven, why is he 6,300 against a Bears secondary that could be running out two backup corners that has been religiously burnt every time they've been on the field, and Kyle Fuller plays one side of the field, so Michael Thomas, it's not hard to move him around. How in the actual hell is he 6,300, Adam?
Probably just because he hasn't been around much this year, like, simply put. Yeah, Brees is pretty cheap here, especially with Kamara expected to play. It sounds like he's going to be back. And then if Michael Thomas is back. This game is pretty interesting because you have the Bears offense that's been playing much better lately, but it's been due to who they've played, right? Like, came back down to earth against Green Bay, then they played Jacksonville, Minnesota, Houston, Detroit before that. So it's like, I'm not completely sold that this Bears offense is fixed. Their play calling's been a little bit better, which has helped. I really like Allen Robinson here. I think he can and has beaten Marshawn Lattimore in the past. I'm not worried about that. They're going to have to throw in this game. This is a massive pass funnel defense in New Orleans where 72% of the touchdowns scored against him have come via the pass. That's the highest rate in the entire NFL. And 69.8% of the yards against him have come via the pass. It's the sixth highest rate in the NFL. I know Montgomery, it's not even just been, like, you could say it's been matchup-based for Montgomery, but if you just watch him, he looks completely different. Like, he's more decisive, he's more elusive, he's more explosive. So he looks like a completely different player, which is great for his prospects next year. But against arguably the best run defense in the NFL over the last, what, 4 years, 3 years, I don't think he's going to find much success, especially if they get behind. So I really like Allen Robinson here, and I don't think many people are going to play him because, you know, Lattimore has the name recognition and stuff like that. But I think Allen Robinson at his best can absolutely beat Marshawn Lattimore, who I think is good but overrated as a shutdown corner.
Yeah, I mean, I'll have interest in Allen Robinson in this spot. I think that he's definitely in play. He scored over 20 DK points against the secondary last time. I think David Montgomery is in play here. I mean, the offensive line for the Bears has been playing better. Their red zone rushing rate has been climbing in the last few weeks. Yes, that could be due to some of the teams they played, obviously. But the other thing that has to be brought up here is that last time they played New Orleans, I mean, Montgomery ran 21 times for 89 yards. You know, I mean, the Saints have shown some cracks in the pavement over the last few weeks versus other running teams. I mean, like, we saw what the Eagles did versus them. Kansas City, who can't run the ball on anybody all freaking year, they were able to get free for a few runs versus them as well. So I think that Montgomery, it really comes down to, like, I'm probably going to play him, like, in a New Orleans-Chicago game stack. I'm probably not going to play him outside of that. I do think that he could definitely get 90 and a touchdown here. It just depends on how much pass game work he gets. I'm not in love with him. I'm not willing to full fade him. I like Allen Robinson for all the reasons you stated. Darnell Mooney, we got to see if he's actually going to play this week. I don't want any exposure to Anthony Miller. I'm not playing that damn game. I don't care.
Yeah.
Matt Nagy hates Anthony Miller, so that I can't like Anthony Miller if that's the case.
Here's the question. Mm-hmm. Are we going to keep chasing Cole Kmet and watching Jimmy Graham score?
I'm not. Nope.
So frustrating because the process has been right every time. He's got eight targets. He's doubling Jimmy Graham's routes, but Jimmy Graham keeps scoring.
Not versus a team that's second in the NFL in DVOA versus
If I play Cole Kmet, Jimmy Graham's getting in the end zone against his former team. That's a lock.
Dude, my whole thing with it is that the only tight end that they have immensely struggled with the entire season from the Saints' perspective was Darren Waller. And right. Darren Waller is a totally different beast.
Kelsey scored against him, but it was like a one-yard little easy pitch catch. Other than that, he didn't have a huge yardage game. Like,
no, he didn't. Nobody has outside of Darren Waller. They didn't have an answer for Darren Waller. And past that, it's totally boosted all of the numbers for tight ends versus the Saints. But I'm going to rely on process here. I'm not going to go with Kmet. If I'm looking for any cheap option because people are looking for value on this slate, in a game stack, I will have some interest. I'm not even that much on Manny Sanders here because I think he's going to get a bunch of Kyle Fuller in this game. The guy I do want to bring up here, we haven't talked about Jared Cook yet. I think that he is viable. The Bears will struggle versus tight ends. But the cheap guy that I keep dancing around is Marquez Callaway. I'm interested in him if I need the value and it's in a game stack. People are going to go to Anthony Miller, and I think that's wrong. I would rather stack up Callaway with Breeze here because Buster Screen is probably not playing this game. The backup that they've been rolling out for the Bears is Duke Shelley. He's a little bit banged up, but if he plays, dude, he's been targeted 20 times, 16 receptions, and a 114 passer rating. He is terrible. So you're telling me full run slot wide receiver with Drew Breeze. Yeah, I think in a game stack, it's very viable. If you need him to get in another stud and make your lineup different, I'm fine. I'm not going to play him outside of that, but I do want to mention his name here.
Yeah, I like the Jared Cook call, too. Chicago, second most fantasy points per game to tight ends, fifth most targets at seven and almost eight per game, sixth most receptions at 5.5 per game, and they give up a lot of touchdowns in position, too. Second most touchdowns per game, almost a touchdown per game, and probably would be a touchdown per game if Jordan Akins didn't lose the ball in the sun.
And Roquan Smith might not play in this game. He's logged DMP.
That's massive because he's been really good this year.
Yep. I think there's a lot of ways that as popular as Alvin Kamara is going to be on this slate, there are ways to sit here and talk about stacking up the Saints passing attack. And either if you want to play Kamara with Breeze in that, I don't disagree with you. But there are other merits to sit here and talk about not playing Kamara in that stack because you have Chicago is second in DVOA versus pass-catching running backs. I know Kamara last time versus them almost had 100 freaking receiving yards, so I think that he's definitely viable. All I'm going to say here is that Drew Brees does have 300 passing yard and 3 touchdown upside in this spot, and people are like, hey, he's washed. Dude, this Bears defense can't pressure. They are down to only one original starting corner, possibly. If Jalen Johnson plays, he still has not been good. He has been showing why he is a rookie over the back part of the season. So, like I'm talking about, I think that Breeze really does have a ceiling in this game. This is a fantastic, fantastic opportunity to get Michael Thomas going and Drew Breeze going and for Sean Payton to say, all right, let's go out and sling the damn rock. Let's do it, baby. We can do it in this spot. Let's go ahead and do it. Let's get our guys right and get them ready to sit here and roll down the stretch of the playoffs. So I love Saints passing attack in this game. Any other plays out of this game before we move on, Adam?
If you could see into the future and see if Drew Brees gets hurt, play Taysom Hill, I guess.
No, don't put that. Oh, that's bad voodoo. We're not going to. Just No, none of that bad doo-doo here, man. Moving on. So the Cleveland Browns are going to take on the Pittsburgh Steelers. The over-under is set at 47.5. Pittsburgh is favored by 6. I mean, we got to start this off with saying, like half the roster. I know I'm being a little bit hyperbolic, but a ton of this roster is on the COVID list. Kevin Johnson is out. Denzel Ward is out. They're going to be rolling with Robert Jackson starting outside opposite Terrence Mitchell. They have Harrison Bryant is positive with COVID. Like, their head coach is not going to be there. Like, Adam, is there an avenue where you think that Cleveland can actually win this game?
They need Nick Chubb to go crazy, probably.
Okay. And their left guard is out.
Right. I mean, you have to like some of these Pittsburgh receivers, although their passing game has been just so bad for most of the second half of the season. But, I mean, Juju is only 5,500. We know Cleveland has been bad against slot receivers this year. They're allowing over the course of the season, the fifth most slot receptions per game, as well as the fifth most slot yardage per game. Juju is primarily in the slot. He's only 5,500. But Deontay Johnson has a huge ceiling here against Terrence Mitchell. Like, Terrence Mitchell's struggled with speed as well. Deontay Johnson is clearly the wide receiver one on this team still. I think these Pittsburgh receivers, where they're priced at, are kind of all in play. And we know that Cleveland's still going to be able to slow the run down, especially because Pittsburgh just can't run the football. So I think stacking Roethlisberger with two or three of these receivers, given the fact that Denzel Ward's out and their corners just don't match up well, I think that's really interesting here. And it's not that expensive. I mean, Roethlisberger's 6,100, Deontay's 6,200, but then Juju's 5,500, Claypool's 5,200, or if you want to stack with Ebron instead, he's only 3,700, and we know he has touchdown potential at tight end. He's been like 5 to 8 targets a game. That's quietly the best part about their run game being abandoned, is that Ebron, even though he's the fourth option at times, is still getting 5 to 8 targets a game.
Yeah, I think that Pittsburgh could definitely win this game. I like the Ebron call. Here's the other thing I want to bring up here. Juju logged a DNP the other day with an ESU on Thursday. If he is out in this game, oh my Lord, give me Chase Claypool in the slot. Like, oh, yeah. He's going to take over the slot role. He would roll in the slot if Juju is out, dude.
And then you could definitely play Washington as a punt at minimum salary if one of them's out, too.
You definitely could. I would love Chase Claypool. Roll one in the slot versus MJ Stewart. He's logged the second most slot snaps on the season, so it's not Deontay Johnson. He'll stay in his role, but I think it would be Claypool that would move inside, and then Washington would play the outside. Oh, me oh my. Then Chase Claypool, it would be way undervalued. Can you imagine Chase Claypool's, like, just gazelle-ass running in these short routes and getting yards after the catch? Like, running these Juju routes versus MJ Stewart out of the slot? Oh, baby! I would have so much exposure to Chase Claypool. If we don't have Juju, I'm going to have run him anyway, because as bad as Ben has been, as bad as Roethlisberger, if I can phrase that better, has been, dude, I think they'd be still viable here. And I hate it. I hate to say it, but it's true, because Cleveland, they're down to, like, backup to the backup corners. And we know Deontay Johnson's going to get a crap ton of targets. You talked about Ebron's role. Cleveland's been terrible versus tight ends. They don't want to run the damn ball. So I'm not playing James Conner in this game. I'm not playing him. Probably I'm going to fade him out of this entire slate, both on the 3 and 6 gamer. I think this game is really, really easy. It's pick your Pittsburgh pass catchers and Chubb on the other side. I don't have a lot of interest in Landry, and move on.
Do you like Higgins at all?
So if Pittsburgh didn't pressure as well as they do and Baker didn't fall apart due to pressure, I would have more interest in Higgins, because you and I have talked about these Steelers corners. You can beat them with speed. You can beat them deep. I just don't know if Baker is going to sit here and chuck it deep. I don't know if he's going to have time to chuck it deep, much less with pressure and his left guard being out. I think that if Cleveland wants to win this game, they're probably going to neuter Baker some, and they're going to run the damn ball and hope that they're really, really successful doing so. Do you like Higgins more than what I'm letting on here?
Moderately. I was more so just because, like, that's exactly why I asked, because we've talked about these perimeter receivers against Pittsburgh a lot, because they shut down the run, but they can get beat deep. But yeah, it's like, if Baker's under pressure, it's really not going to matter. It's just a brutal spot for Cleveland. On the road, half your team and your coaching staff is out with COVID. Like,
any interest in Kareem Hunt before we get out of this game?
No.
Yeah, I agree with you. We have not seen a ceiling out of Kareem Hunt. The only game we saw that was that explosion, miraculous, marvelous, beautiful game, possibly the game of the season versus the Ravens. Outside of that, has not happened, man. All right, everyone, that is the game by game for Wild Card Weekend. Like we talked about, you need to be checking out all of the fantastic content across FTN Daily, FTN Bets, FTN Fantasy, covering the NFL playoffs. Moving forward, we're going to have showdown stuff. We're going to have streams. We're going to have all kinds of fantastic content covering betting, DFS, and more. So head over there for all of that fantastic content. Get signed up with the promo code FTC. Save 10% at your sign up. And Adam and I will be back. We're going to be rolling through the playoffs for your DFS lineups, for DFS action, covering all of the edges that you could possibly have when setting your lineups. For Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.